Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Olivia Colman at her best. I think she's genuinely one of the best actors we've ever had, and she absolutely rules this in a film that's got quite a deep bench of actors, but she absolutely carries it. She absolutely smashes it from the very start to the end.
On one hand, it's really quite gripping because you're thinking this awful thing is going to happen, this awful thing is going to happen. And then it is a bit draggy in places, so that does let it down a little bit.
There's a lot of female anxieties going on in this, which normally when we see that, it's in some kind of jokey female comedy and it's all a bit of a joke and a laugh, whereas here it's not. It's presented as something a bit more real. Hello everyone. Joining Flixwatch today, we have Jen.
Hello.
Hannah.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Yo.
And we're going to be talking about The Lost Daughter. Thank you as always to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello film fans, joining FlixWatcher remotely today, we have Jen and Hannah. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello, my name is Hannah Walker-Brown. I'm the creative director of Broccoli Productions, which is a podcast production company joint venture with Sony Music Entertainment. So I make podcasts, documentaries. I've just had my first book published, A Delicate Game, which is about brain injury, sport and sacrifice.
Tell us a bit about that book, Hannah. I've listened to your dulcet tones over it. What was it like recording that, and what was it like writing the book?
Oh, recording the audio book, that's terrifying. That's like, I never listen to my work when it goes out, but having to sit there in a booth and read it from start to finish and be like, oh my god, that was traumatizing. But it started as a four-part audio documentary I made for Audible called The Beautiful Brain, which kind of followed the story of West Bromwich Albion player Jeff Astle through the kind of voices and eyes of his family and his death, very tragic death, and his diagnosis of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, which people might know from American football and the NFL, a guy called Dr. Bennett Omalu, who Will Smith played in the film Concussion, who I also interviewed extensively, Bennett Omalu, not Will Smith, for this. And the documentary made quite an impact, so I thought I should do more. It's the sort of thing where you kind of fall down a rabbit hole and then you just keep going because there's just so much to uncover. And sort of the deeper I went, the more corruption I found, the more people I found, and ultimately just kind of the stories that are emerging now with rugby and the litigation against rugby is sort of the tip of a very big iceberg for sort of global contact sports.
Yeah, it was in the news this year, wasn't it? The ex-Welsh player at the age of 40.
So it's Alec really Popham sad. And Steve Thompson. So Steve Thompson, they're both in the book actually, but Steve Thompson kind of can't remember winning the World Cup, can't remember meeting Nelson Mandela, can watch himself play on a screen, but has no recall of any of those moments, and he got his diagnosis at 40. Yeah, he's 42 now.
Yeah, same age as me.
Yeah, not to start on a downers, but that's what my book's about.
No, I think it's great, and it's something that I didn't realize is it's essentially money, isn't it? When you look at all sides of it, that's why they don't want to.
Yeah, it's business. Yeah. Like sport is business, and I think that's what we kind of forget. Again, we feel like we own it, and it's for us, and it gives us such an identity and a sense of belonging. Mm. And it's kind of an ideology in some respects. Like it gives us something to believe in when, you know, there's not much else going on to kind of have faith in, but it's that kind of, it's very powerful. So Yeah, but it is business, and the people that win and cash in aren't always, you know, the ones that we think they are, not the ones with the big salaries. That they do sometimes, but I think, you know, it's a terrible way to treat your assets if you're a business.
I think that that business line you make applies to a lot of the nonsense. And I use the word nonsense lightly here because it's what protects the predatory, mainly males in show business, because they're like, oh, they're big earners, they're big bankers, so we're gonna protect them. It protects one of the reasons they don't want to calm down the NFL or other contact sports is because they think it's going to affect how much we watch them, how much end along the bottom line, how much money they're going to make. It's one of the reasons they don't show women's football in the UK as much, because they think, oh, well, no one's going to watch that. But then if you just show you the matches, people will watch them. And it's that business line where people wrongly take the wrong route, I think, too many times, for the detriment of many, many people.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
my soapbox moment for this episode, guys. I'm going to go to Jen, who's also got sports stories to talk about in her book.
Sports.
I know how much you like sport, Helen. I recall from my last.
Yeah, Jen
foray.
Is a repeat. Is a returning to the FlixWatcher podcast. If you want to listen to Jen's voice multiple times, you can scroll down the feed a bit more.
A long way.
It'll be Creed.
Possibly both.
In Bruges
as well, yes. And Michael McDonald's got a new film coming out, Banshee of Enniskirin. Sorry, I'm taking away from your introduction, Jen. Please tell us who you are.
I'm far more interested in Michael B. Jordan, to be honest. But anyway, I am Jen Offord. I am a producer and presenter of the Standard Issue podcast. We are a magazine for ears. That's what we call ourselves. And we about everything that women are interested in, which is everything, not just like lipstick and shit like that. Anyway, and we only have women on the podcast, apart from once a year we let men do a little bit of talking because they just find it really hard to get the opportunity otherwise. And I am also the author of a sports-themed book, The Year of the Robin, Watching It All Go Wrong for Charlton Athletic and the World, which is about, as the title would suggest, Charlton Athletic, but it's kind of about everything. It's about society in general. It covers a lot of different aspects of the beautiful game and society, such as mental health in sports, such as racism, homophobia, women's football, and then also talking to different people who are involved with the club in this one season when we had obviously a global pandemic and a completely mental time in the boardroom at the club, and everything went just absolutely crazy. So yeah, from a writer's perspective, it ended up being far more interesting than I could have anticipated, and kind of a gift in a way, but from a fan's perspective, pretty awful. So.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I guess that line about business as well that we talked about just a few minutes ago applies to a lot where you said that homophobia in the sport. I cannot believe there's only one openly gay footballer in the entire world, and he's like 21, and it's like that's
not
the
in
most
the entire
insane.
World in the top four tiers of English football. I believe there are a few other openly gay footballers in and around. I think there's been a Swedish guy and an Australian guy and an American guy.
I was thinking about the Australian guy.
I think they all came out after their careers ended, possibly. But yeah, the only current player in the top four tiers of English football who is openly gay, which is obviously a statistical improbability.
Yeah. But we're here today to talk about The Lost Daughter, which is your film, Jen. Your choice. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it?
It's not my actual film. Yeah. I don't make it, sorry.
Can you tell us why you chose it? And then I'll get the stopwatch out and the timer out. You have 1 minute to give us a synopsis.
Okay, I chose it because I missed it at the time that it was released, which wasn't even that long ago, I don't think. But I think I was sort of too busy having a child and writing a book at the time. So I missed it then, and I've wanted to watch it because obviously it's Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut, which is interesting. It's got Olivia Colman in it, who's fantastic. And it's about parenthood and it looks harrowing. So I thought, well, why not treat ourselves at this time that my daughter's 2 years old and we're having the best time. I know Kobe's son is not that much older than my daughter, so I'm sure some of this is going to be relatable content. Anyway.
So, synopsis, and time starts now.
Okay, so Olivia Colman is an academic called Leda who's gone on holiday to the Greek islands, and she encounters basically like the Asbo neighbour family who are on the beach with her, and they're all pretty awful, to be honest. And the situation escalates. There's a woman there called Nina who has a little girl, and she's clearly having a pretty horrible time of it. And the film leads you to believe that something really, 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 really awful has happened in Leda's past. But spoiler alert, it's not as bad as you think. But it is also pretty bad because she's had a shitty time. And the situation escalates. She gets stabbed with a hatpin. The end.
So we actually start the film at the end, which is an interesting device. And I think that kind of slightly wrong foots it, because you think, oh, well, she's dead because she's kind of stumbling along the beach, and then she's got some blood in her stomach, and then she falls on the sand. And I feel that kind of sets you up. It does wrong foot you in this film. I don't normally mind that kind of setup, but it seems it's inconsequential, I think, that piece. And what were your thoughts, guys?
I'm going to disagree with you on that, because I didn't even notice that there was any blood in the opening sequence. I'd completely missed that. So I just thought she was a bit drunk or something. I don't think I knew what was going on. I was just a bit like, oh, she's
maybe
on
I imagined the blood.
And
I thought there was some blood. But
well, there was at the end. There definitely is. Sure. I did notice it at the end. So you're probably quite right. But I didn't really notice that. I think I thought something bad had happened, but I definitely didn't think she was dead or dying. I don't think she actually dies, does she? I don't know.
Well, that's up for debate, isn't it? But I agree that I actually think, because it started like that, I was expecting the whole time, I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Because I thought that was a device. But then actually where it ended up wasn't disappointing, but I just felt it was a bit less than what I expected based on the opening. I thought they made kind of a big deal about the drama of that, and then it just sort of didn't go where I thought it would.
But I think the whole film kind of ratchets up that something terrible's happened, something terrible's happened, something terrible's happened. Because I don't know about you, but I fully thought, well, clearly her daughter's dead, right? Like, she's got a dark past, and that dark past her daughter died and she's not over it.
The lost part is lost as in gone for good, as in terrible loss.
Yeah.
And also you have the flashes when Nina's daughter goes missing. Yeah. There are flashes where you think that she's going back to what seems like her daughter's gone missing in a similar episode. And you're like, well, that was it. She went missing one day, and like Madeline McCann almost, and you never get her back. So it was, again, slightly misleading. Misleading is maybe the wrong word. That's the way the story wanted to take it, and it did take us down the route away, I guess.
Yeah, however, just as we're talking about this now, because I was thinking about this in terms of like, what I did really like about this is, you know, I always know when it's a woman writing for a woman or a woman director directing women, because I just think there's so much more nuance, especially in terms of like mental health. And I actually think the intensity of this film, even though I'm like, oh, it didn't go where I wanted it to, but actually in some ways it was kind of that, you know, she's obviously quite unwell in a lot of ways. There's a lot of things going on psychologically, like within her. And I felt that actually was really well represented.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just sort of thinking about this now in reflection about like, maybe that intensity is from there, and why shouldn't that be enough to carry that weight versus having something big happen? And I think that's where, like, you know, huge respect for director for navigating that and making that so palpable, I guess.
Writer and director.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it doesn't always have to be something dramatic happen for us to have a display of something that intense.
I mean,
does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
A 2-year-old feels pretty dramatic in real terms. Like, parenting small children feels pretty dramatic at times, even when it's just like them throwing their Weetabix on the floor. I thought it did that so well.
Yeah.
That kind of like, or just the suffocation. I think she says it at one point, I'm suffocating.
And she also says children are a crushing responsibility. And the delivery of that line is amazing.
When she said to her, no, it never goes away, kind of thing as well, I was like, I know it does for some people, but if it didn't for you, that's a really big blow. And it wasn't, I know postpartum depression is, I think it's treated a lot differently then, or less well discussed, or if not considered to be a thing when Nina's younger self had the kids. So it is, it's a super tough thing to go through, isn't it?
But I don't even think this is necessarily, I think this is the thing, I don't even think this is necessarily postpartum depression that they're talking about. I think they're talking about the stress and anxiety around raising kids and having a lack of support and feeling that it is just, I think it's also the career angle for her is really interesting as well, because there's obviously an expectation on her that she will just kind of like look after these kids. And her needs and feelings and ambitions need to take a back seat in order to do that, because her husband isn't around. He's off working, I assume, somewhere else. And so I don't even think it's necessarily about depression. I think it's really just about the claustrophobia of being indoors with young children, basically, which again, like becoming a mother during a global pandemic where we're all locked in our homes, like, is something that I can definitely relate to. Maybe not quite as much as later, but yeah.
And something about identity wrapped up in that as well, I think, as well, like losing your sense of self. Because she, you know, as the film goes on, she's losing it. Like, we sort of witness that in kind of very, like, you know, obvious ways with the kind of the guy in the bar when she goes in and, you know, makes a big scene. But then also in the, like, taking the doll, like these very, like, I don't know, kind of trying to hold on to something that is escaping her, or I don't know. I felt it was as much about her as it was her as a mother, and like trying to kind of grapple with those two things and feeling a sense of loss.
I think that side of it is a bit confusing, because you're a bit like, okay, well, I understand the bit before. Is that about her, I don't know, relentless guilt about what she ends up doing?
What she ends up doing, just to clarify, well, is that she has an affair with a professor who really dotes on her, I guess, and ends up leaving her daughters, which is the big reveal. Not that the daughter's dead, but it's still obviously a heavy thing to go through, isn't it?
Yeah, making a choice. You know, I think that's the other thing that it's not a kind of, I don't know, it's.
It's a massive taboo, isn't it, for women?
Yeah, we usually see it as, you know, people leave their kids when they're a drug addict or when they're this. Like, it's not ever seen as, you know, a choice because you want something else.
She just doesn't want to hang around with them.
Yeah. There's an expectation that women will just cope as well, won't they? That women will just take it and suffer and cope and get on with it. Whereas we kind of think when men leave, well, you know.
Yeah.
Happens, doesn't it?
So
I do think it's just it's just a massive taboo, the idea of women leaving their offspring.
There's that line where she said, when Nina asks her, what did it feel like when you left your kids, and she was like, amazing. That was both laced with humor but also darkly honest as well, and you can kind of feel it. And this is Olivia Colman at her best, and she's been at her best since the first time I've seen her on TV. I thought she's always amazing in Green Wing and Peep Show, and then when she was in Tyrannosaur, which is the change that took her to more dramatic acting, she was amazing there. And then she just continued. I think she's genuinely one of the best actors we've ever had, and she absolutely rules this in a film that's got quite a deep bench of actors who don't really get a look in, or they do get a look in, they get their place, but they're all like playing second fiddle to her all the way through. But she absolutely carries it. She absolutely smashes it from the very start to the end.
She is the queen that I recognise. She is the queen. Yeah, I mean, Dakota Johnson is great in this. And interestingly, like, she dropped out of Don't Worry Darling to be in this. So I think she played that one wisely. But she's great. Your man from Normal People, he's in there.
Is he Will?
That he's in there.
Isn't he?
What's his name?
I don't know. I just remember his chain. Connell's chain.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's Paul something, I think. I can't remember.
Mezcal.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and, I like the tequila.
And props to Maggie G for putting her husband as the man she has an affair with.
Sexy prof.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's right.
Ed Harris is in there as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I did think, I don't know her name, but who the woman playing the young Olivia Colman.
Oh,
Jessie Buckley.
Jessie Buckley
yeah.
is awesome.
Jessie
as
Buckley,
well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I thought she was excellent.
So, yeah, Jessie Buckley and Olivia Colman both got Oscar nominated for this, for supporting actress and main actress both as well. Jessie Buckley's awesome as well. I think.
Yeah, I love her so much.
I forgot that she was in it because I hadn't seen this film before. And then, but as soon as you flip to Jessie Buckley, you're like, oh, that's a young lady. This is going to go between two timelines. So it takes a while to get to Jessie Buckley for the first time.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then the news, oh, I know exactly, we're going to go back and forth now. And Jessie was fantastic on that side.
Also, just so aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Like the place she's renting
in Greece.
Mm. Yeah, it just made me really want to go on holiday as well.
It did. one thing I loved her responses to being like her tranquility being taken away from her. So when she's first on the beach and the Chav family turn up, the Chav family from Queens turn up, and you,
I think they might actually be gangsters, but they do present as
Will alludes to that, doesn't it?
There's some dirty money going on there,
and
that's why the expectations it's going to go somewhere more sinister than it does. I thought it was going to be like cartel situation.
Yeah, I thought that. I thought that as well. Yeah, so when she's on the beach by herself, she's loving it, and then they turn up for the first time. You're like, oh mate, I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. When she's in the cinema.
I hated those boys so hard.
There's two great lines, which when she's asked if she can change her sun lounger, and she says, I have no desire to move, which is icon behaviour. And of course, the famous line in the cinema that she wants to cut your tiny dicks off and feed them to you like peanuts. It's just like, I love it.
Yeah, is that, but why should you disturb the peace? I feel like there's an expectation when you're on your own as well. People just think you should do whatever they say if you're in the minority. But actually, she's on holiday. She just wants to live her best life and they're ruining it.
And the way they acknowledge as well, you know, be good for the lady, they say to the kids. Mm. Like, they know she's there, they know she's chilling out, but at the same time, they're not even trying to, like, keep it down a bit. It's just, yeah. Oh. Well, let's talk about...
And did the pine cone fall or did someone throw it? You never know.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even consider... Yeah, fair enough.
I thought it was thrown.
I did as well.
He calls her a cunt. Like,
yeah.
To her face. That's quite extreme behaviour, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about the other... there was Ed Harris, who seems to have a great time in this film.
Cooking his octopus.
I really thought the cast is awesome in this. Like I say, even though it's second fiddle to Olivia, but Ed Harris, you know, his dancing in this, in that part was hilarious. In other films, you would have seen that being a relationship that they encounter, that they go along. I was kind of taken away by this film. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny and dark, and I had no idea where the storyline with the stolen doll was going to go, but I was terrified for her every time she lost it or misplaced it. Or, you know, I thought she was going to have lost it, go down to the beach. The bad guy's there with the doll in the hand, in one hand, and the gun in the other one, and just take her out, well, shoot her in the stomach. That's what I thought was going to happen. But yeah, it says something about her state of mind, where she's happy to take the doll, get clothes for it, try and nurse it back to some kind of cleanliness, and yeah. I thought it was great. That's what I'm going to say. Anything else, guys, want to say before we head to the scores?
There's a really interesting bit where she's on the phone to, I believe it's one of her daughters. I think she either says that. And you can tell she's really excited to kind of like talk about a holiday and talk about where she is. And she's kind of like cut off at that point. The person on the phone is kind of either ending the call or... And it's just those little moments like that, those like these little tensions that are running, like when she's called a cunt, and there's just all these like little moments that are just like gnawing away at her and kind of like pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing until she obviously has that breakdown at the end, but it kind of feels like it's more cathartic. So she rings one of her daughters after it, and it kind of like feels that it's all building to that one moment.
They do have that weird, I did pick up on that actually at the start when she first talks to her daughter, as you say, and her daughter's like, the conversation gets shut down really quickly and she's like, oh, I'm on holiday. And I'm like, it's weird that you wouldn't know your mum was on holiday, isn't it?
Mm. Kind of stresses that their relationship is maybe quite sort of not distant. Great after she left them.
you get a hint very early on that there is a distance between them, because I just thought like my mum would tell me like relentlessly that she was going on holiday. I'd know every single detail of it.
But then when they talk on the beach, assuming it's the same daughter, but she says, oh, both of you are there, I think. It seems like a really happy conversation, though. Is that partly why, was it you, Hannah, said maybe she died at the end? And that was the...
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that's kind of... Or again, it could just be that thing of, you know, if you have a kind of strained relationship with a parent, some days is good days, some days is bad days. So I think that is a good explanation. But then equally, you know, is that what she's now longing for and now has? I don't know. I wasn't sure, to be honest. I thought it left it quite open ended.
I like that interpretation. I'm gonna ponder on it a bit more.
I spent a bit of time trying to figure out how much damage the hat pin would do. Like, would a hat pin realistically kill you? I don't know. I don't have answers.
I guess if you just sort of...
Well, she left it, didn't she? She didn't go to get any... It didn't seem like she was getting any medical attention
and
towards...
The sea's right there, you know.
Salt water, that's good,
tin,
isn't it?
It's the water. Yeah, not if you got face first in it or she fell asleep or something, you know.
That is a good point, yeah.
I always, when stomach injuries occur in films, I always refer to Reservoir Dogs, because apparently if you get shot in the stomach, you can live for quite a long time. So that was my frame of reference. So I assume she was okay. I didn't think she died. I thought it'd just be quite painful. And I thought she thought she was just going to get on the plane and get to UK hospital as soon as she kind of landed to see if there's anything majorly gone wrong there.
Oh, it's actually making me cringe a bit thinking about it.
Yeah.
Chekhov's hat pin.
I don't know. I didn't feel like she died. And there was a bit. I was watching it, this is the second time watching it, there's quite an extensive conversation that she has where she talks about the physicality of herself and her daughter in relation to breasts with Paul Mescal's character. And it's a very strange conversation to be having with someone who is potentially a stranger. And there's just a lot of things. There's clearly, she's got a lot of issues, and the way she projects them is in such a very, very strange way. It's just not normal behavior, but she kind of says it in a normal way that and I think that's partly her performance in that, but there's some very strange things she says about kind of her daughters and herself. And there's a lot of talk about how old she is and how old she looks, and people are complimenting her and she's always like, oh no, I'm not. And it's that very, very female. I think that's what it is. There's a lot of female anxieties going on in this, which normally when we see that, it's in some kind of jokey female comedy and it's all a bit of a joke and a laugh, whereas here it's not, it's presented as something a bit more real.
I mean, that kind of came to head before she got stabbed, and she presented the doll back to Nina, and Nina's like, so made up, oh, where did you find it? She could have easily got away with that, but she said, no, I took it. And that's a key indicator of where her kind of state of mind is. And I thought it was a really interesting way to finish it.
Yeah, I think that kind of ties in what we were saying before about like identity and like that craving attention or it being about you, not about the kids or about being a mum. Like it kind of, I don't know, I feel like a lot of that is, I guess when you do something that big, you kind of, I don't know, you almost stay that age in a way, like that kind of young and free, and you get rid of your responsibilities and whatever. And I don't know, it felt like we were almost kind of watching her grow up at the same time. She didn't act her age a lot of the time. She didn't kind of hold herself in a way we would expect. I mean, I'm not kind of stereotyping people, you know, act all kinds of ways. But...
She's only, what, was she 46, was she? It's like 4 years older than me. 48, okay.
Yeah, there was just something about it that was quite kind of teenage. You know, quite young.
like she's been locked away in amber since she left her kids.
Yeah.
And had the...
Well, she just never grew up. You know, yeah. She never had to face those responsibilities. She just did what she wanted. And I don't know, something about that attention.
That's quite interesting, isn't it? Because that's like that's something, again, that people say about men, isn't it? In a quite forgiving way. Like, oh, just, you know, they're just lads. They just never grew up, whatever. They've got no concept of responsibility. It's just boys will be boys. But obviously, if a woman does that, shit the bed. It's the worst thing you could do.
She's awful. What a terrible mother, woman, human. Yeah.
Anything else, guys, want to say before we head to the scores?
No.
Okay.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. As always, the scores are out of 5. You can have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Jen, with your recommendability.
4. I'm not going to give it full marks, just because that's generally how I roll. Something has to be like pretty exceptional to get a 5, I would say. So I'm going to give it a 4. I definitely think it's worth a watch. I think the performances are really good, and it is quite compelling, but it's a bit too long, I would say.
Hannah?
I'm also going to give it a 4. I'd also say a bit too long, dragged a little bit in places. Performance is great, directing, writing, great, characters, great, setting, great, but yeah, didn't need to be that long.
Helen?
I'm also going to give it a 4. So I haven't read any of Elena Ferrante's books, but like, I really, really, really wanted to love this and this to be my favourite film of the year. But I just think it is too long and it's a bit all over the place. There's bits that I really, really love, and then there's other bits I'm just like, you could have cut that out. And I do wonder if that is the difficulty of translating a book, which I think a lot of it is her kind of internal thoughts onto a film and having to kind of like pad that out with acting. So a 4. I recommend it, but I wish I'd liked it more than I did.
I'm going a bit high for you, you guys. 4.38. And...
what? 3.8 is just so much more.
Yeah, just this...
What 0.38 made it better for you?
The hat pin. Chekhov's hat pin. No, I just generally enjoyed it. A lot of pieces came together. I think the slight wrong-footedness of the... where it's going to end up. Maybe I need to ponder on that a bit more. I love that it's Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut. I'd hope she does more. Although I said about Booksmart and Olivia Wilde's getting an absolute pasting now, isn't she, for Don't Worry Darling? I'm sure...
You don't know until you've seen it.
Exactly. This is it. But I think the knives have been drawn, a lot of knives have been drawn for especially female directors, haven't they? Unnecessarily, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Woody Allen, come on.
I think it's a great film, not just a great first film. I think it's a really good film, and I was quite surprised Maggie Gyllenhaal wasn't in there herself. To be honest with you,
quite rate that though.
Yeah,
yeah.
I do agree with you, Helen. Though I did really want to love it. I really did. I was like, I actually saved. I'd seen it before, and I'd saved it until I could really, you know, not be distracted and get into it the first time I watched it. And I was like, It was good, but I think maybe I just wanted to really love it.
I think for me, that it's the time, 2 hours for the story, I don't think it's warranted. I think it needs to be a miniseries where they give more time to kind of both ladies, or it's just like made like a short talk kind of story. Repeat viewing score, Jen.
I don't know if I'll seek it out again, but again, if it was, you know, if I happened upon it, I would watch it. 2.5.
Hannah.
Yeah, I've seen it twice now. I didn't really get anything new. It was still quite compelling, though, as in, you know, anticipation. But I'll give it a 3.
Helen?
Yeah, this is my same time watching it. I give it a 3 as well. Some bits I really enjoyed watching again, and then others were, I was a bit like, oh yeah, this was a bit of a drag. Get to the bit where she's in the cinema and I just love her in that.
I'll probably watch again at some point, but not rushing to it. But like I say, I'm keen to see, well, everything that Olivia does, and look forward to whatever Maggie Gyllenhaal does next.
Have you seen Joyride?
No.
You might regret saying that then.
Is it good?
It's not good.
Okay. Because the trailer's very bad.
What score did I say? I was suddenly thinking about Joyride then. 2. Small screen score. Jen.
I think it's fine, isn't it? I mean, I guess like Hannah sort of picked up on the aesthetic qualities of it more. I think probably would get a bit more enjoyment from watching it on the bigger screen, but I don't think it would impact on it that much. I guess I'd give it maybe like a
3.5.
Yeah, I agree. I think it actually would have elevated it on a bigger screen just because some of the like landscape aesthetically, I think when it's draggy, you need something bigger to look at. So I'm going to give it a 3.
Helen?
We had no choice. Still in pandemic lockdown. Just came straight to Netflix with no
good point.
No choice. Did it?
Yeah. Their big kind of like films they had at the beginning of this year. So we had no choice but to watch it on the small screen. I 100% would have gone to the cinema to see this. This had like all of the tasty bait for me to want to go and seek this out. So I think it was a shame that it didn't get to have that big screen moment, because I would have cheered at the bit where she shouts at the boys at the cinema. Don't know why I would have done that. I would have done it. I would have loved to see it on the big screen.
Have you ever shushed people in the cinema?
I have.
Yeah, I had to do it recently. Like, they're just talking incessantly and clanking their wine bottles. I was like, can you just shut up?
I actually told off a group of teenagers because they were picking on a clearly disabled boy. So I leant forward and said, will you stop being so rude? This is about 10 years ago as well.
Yes, so Ms. Jen.
Absolutely outrageous behaviour. And in fairness, I proper shamed them and they stopped. But I don't think I'd ever have the balls to tell people to stop like clinking glasses or whatever. I just
drunk people in the cinema can be pretty aggro.
But I mean,
yeah,
for me, like, cinema is one of my proper like self-love safe spaces, and if someone's there, just like the phone, even if the phone's flashing and they're not paying attention to me, I feel like I want to pick up the phone and throw it into a vortex.
That I find so frustrating when I can see that, because it will totally divert my attention and I won't be able to then refocus.
Yeah. So I've shushed people. I've told people to, will you please shut up? Almost like Jen. Most people do like stop, and it's quite nice, because like, if you go to a cinema in central London, people are paying £20 for the experience of being there, and you're just being a knobhead next to them. Anyway, sorry. Long story short, I loved it when Olivia stood up. First of all, looked for an usher, and then swore at them. I loved it to bits. Maybe that's where that's where the 0.38 comes from, actually.
That makes sense.
Visceral, vicarious living through Olivia Colman's character later.
Did I give you my score? Did I give one?
Don't think so.
I can't remember. 3.5.
I think this is fine on the small screen. I would have seen it at the cinema pre-pandemic times, pre-kid times. I'm going to go 3.5 for the rest of you. Engagement score. Jen.
It's like a story of like two halves, really, isn't it? It's like, I think on one hand, it's really quite gripping because you're thinking this awful thing is going to happen. And then it is a bit draggy in places. So that does let it down a little bit. So I think I would go with, I think I'm going to say 3.5 again.
Hannah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm going to say 3.5. Yeah, I'm going to say 3.5 as well.
3.5 is the score of the moment. Helen?
Yeah, the same. 3.5. It watching it the second time round, I was like, oh, it really does drag a bit. And I don't quite know what it is, because all of the acting is great. And there is kind of like the momentum going with the doll and you know, like, how does Jesse Buckley become Olivia Colman kind of thing. But yeah, it's such a shame. I just really wanted to love it. But yeah, 3.5.
Having this discussion now, I kind of feel that there's a few kind of non sequiturs that kind of left me a bit empty as well. Like the affair that Nina and Will were having, for example. I was kind of like,
it's almost no point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To that whole
I
plot
agree.
Line.
Your thing, Kobe, about it being, if it was like a series where you gave them space to develop those characters and those storylines, that probably would have been quite a compelling show.
Yeah.
Because you don't care about her husband's like a massive twat anyway. So you're like, well, of course you'd have an affair because you've got that guy for a husband. So it's
as much as you can understand an affair. It was a case of like, this island, this area seems very, very small. And you warned later that these are very bad people just for standing up for herself. Yet you're having an affair with the partner, the wife of the person who seems the most scary. So it seemed like I don't care ultimately. And what was the other non-sequitur? Yeah, the Ed Harris character. I thought there was going to be, you know, he seems to have more about him. They could have gone in a more interesting direction. But it was just a guy that literally took some suitcases up the stairs, gave a rotten, mouldy fruit and danced with her for a bit and got some octopus. And, you know, Ed Harris seems... We've had Ed Harris in a few films. Not Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. The other Jim Carrey film.
Apollo 13. He was in that one.
So Apollo 13 and... the one with Jim Carrey stuck in a massive studio.
Truman Show.
The Truman Show, there you go. Ed Harris, he's in that as well. Ed Harris is always an interesting character when he turns up on screen. I'm not sure what he was wasted, but at the same time, I was kind of, you know, want more from him. Anyway, long story short, my score for this is 3.5. So, like, it's an overall score of 3.39875. I thought it was going to be a bit higher than that. Repeat viewing score lets it down in the main. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. Hannah and Jen, can you tell us where we can find you guys online? Tell us what the names of your books are, where we can buy the books online and offline, and say goodbye to the listeners.
You can find me on Twitter. I am at InspireJen, or Instagram. I am Jen 2Ns off, as in Jen off. And Standard Issue is Standard Issue UK on Twitter and Standard Issue Podcast on Instagram. And my book, The Year of the Robin, is available predominantly online, I would say, via Waterstones or Amazon or wherever else you get your books.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure. Jen Returney, guest, Hannah, do come back. And guys, if you're listening, buy the books, listen to their podcasts, and find them on Twitter and Instagram.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks very much, guys.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixwatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at Flixwatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them Flixwatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.